So we're from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, chapter 17, text 36. The pastimes of the Lord in his youth. So just the verse 36, that's the first one, but there's no purport, and then we'll do this together, the 37 and 38. Translation. Thus the non-believers almost burnt to ashes and died in envy. To retaliate, they planned various ways to give trouble to Srivast Thakur. Translation. One night while Ketan was going on inside Srivast Thakur's house, a Brahmin named Gopal Chapala, the chief of the non-believers, who was talkative and very rough in his speech, placed all the paraphernalia for worshipping the goddess Durga outside Srivast Thakur's door. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This Brahmin, Gopal Chapala, wanted to defame Srivast Thakur by proving that he was actually a Shakta, or a worshipper of Bhavani, the goddess Durga, but was externally posing as a Vaishnav. In Bengal there is a perpetual competition between the devotees of goddess Kali and the devotees of Lord Krishna. Generally Bengalis, especially those who are meat eaters and drunkards, are very much attached to worshipping the goddess Durga, Kali, Sitala and Chandi. Such devotees, who are known as Shaktas, are worshippers of the Shakti Tattva, are always envious of Vaishnavas. Since Srivast Thakur was a well known and respected Vaishnav in Navadvip, Gopal Chapala wanted to reduce his prestige by bringing him down to the platform of the Shaktas. Therefore, outside Srivast Thakur's door, he placed various paraphernalia for worshipping Bhavani, the wife of Lord Shiva, such as a red flower, a plantain leaf, a pot of wine, and reddish sandalwood paste. In the morning, when Srivast Thakur saw all this paraphernalia in front of his door, he called for the respectable gentlemen of the neighbourhood and showed them that at night he was worshipping Bhavani. Very much sorry, these gentlemen called for a sweeper to cleanse the place and purify it by sprinkling water and cow dung there. This incident concerning Gopal Chapala is not mentioned in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Om Gyanti Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sargrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Vrindavanishvari Rishavano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vebhyo Namo. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadha Sri Vasudeva Bhaktavinoda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Jai Advaita Maharaj was speaking last Sunday about the Kirtan, whether it should be performed inside or outside. And the conclusion was that, what was the conclusion, can anybody remember? It should be both, yeah, it should be performed inside and outside. But here, I mean, they obviously knew that some people were just too envious to come into the kirtan, so they had indoor kirtan. just for the Vaishnavas, and then later of course Lord Chaitanya went out and started distributing the holy name profusely everywhere. But this is a process, is that when doing kirtan, is that it's not for ourselves, it's for the benefit of the world. And well, there's different what is it, there's different tastes from these different types of chanting, like japa. Do many people get a taste from japa? Put your hands up. I guess a taste. It's like it's a real effort, isn't it? Japa, focusing on the holy name. So, you know, but kirtan, that's a little different, yeah? Kirtan, you know, there's quite often a taste, like today, just we had a kirtan. Everybody's smiling, everybody's, you know, usually get dancing, and it's quite a... But sankirtan, now that's a different experience altogether. As soon as we go out on sankirtan, then everybody's bouncing. Why? Because, you know, our pleasure depends on the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, Krishna's in the heart. And so when he's satisfied, you know, we also become satisfied. And, you know, the whole purpose of this movement, we said the other day, is to give Krishna consciousness. And so sankirtan, everything we do to chant the holy name pleases Krishna, but when we share it with others, then, you know, that's really pleasing. You know, Prabhupada was like that. He didn't stay in India and keep it local. He didn't keep it in the family. He went out of India and he started preaching in the West. And so therefore he was able to do so much because Krishna was pleased. So, you know, the success of our activities depends on how much Krishna is pleased with us. If Krishna is pleased, then, you know, everything can happen. And then coming on to this particular verse, these verses, so the, yeah, in the Krishna book, in the 10th canto, the first chapter, it talks about Lord Krishna's appearance, the advent of Lord Krishna, they call it, and it talks about how Krishna appeared in the womb of... Who did he appear in the womb of? Devaki and Yashoda. But anyway, he said that he appeared in the womb of Yashoda also because the Acharyas used the word Anuja. It means the young, when Kamsa tried to capture the eighth child of Devaki, it was actually Durga Devi who had been replaced. And so she flew up in the air and she said, "You fool, Kamsa, you think you can kill me? You know, the child who you were looking for is already born somewhere else." And the word Anuja was the younger sister of Krishna. So it must have meant that if his younger sister, they're born from the same womb. And so it's, Prabhupada explains there that there's always the Shaktas, those who worship the material energy, Durga Devi, and there's always the Bhaktas, the Shaktas and the Bhaktas. And so there's always differences. And so in this particular verse it's also saying the same thing. You know, everybody in the material world, they're a Shakta to some degree, aren't they? Everybody's worshipping the material energy even though they don't know it. But here it's their particular Shaktas because they make an effort to glorify Durga Devi. So in Brahma Samhita it starts to explain about this. I'll just read the verse. It says in the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita, verse 41, it says that Maya hi asya jagat andas sutani sute sai gunyitad vishaya veda vichavalam bhyo sattvam valambi parasattva vishuddha sattvam govinda madhi purusham tamaham bhajami. And so Lord Brahma is praying that of the two deities, everything comes from Krishna. You know, he's the substance behind the material world, and he's the source of the three modes of material nature. He's the source of the Vedic knowledge. Next verse explains how the activities in the transcendental world are actually, they reign over the activities in the material world, so they're superior. And we were speaking a little bit about that the other day, about, you know, I'll not mention any names, but it was one famous actor. And this is the whole purpose of entertainment, is to take people into a world where they can actually enjoy. And so, you know, like Walt Disney, why is everybody attracted to that? Because, you know, it takes us out of this world. It's like a world where there's no limitation. One can, you know, because we're limited in this body, we're limited in this world, everything we try to do is thwarted at some point. You know, some people say that, anyway, so in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this point's made that in the first canto, second chapter, text 8, in the purport, Prabhupada explains that the soul wants to see the free light. He wants to get beyond the coverings of this universe. So this is what this particular verse is saying, that's the world that is superior to this. This is where Krishna reigns supreme. The next, it says that Goloka namni nijadamni chale tatasha devi mahesha hari dharma shatesha teshu. So this is explained that, you know, there are levels of grades in this, of different living situations in this material world, right up to the spiritual world. It says, you know, Goloka namni nijadamni, that's nijadamni, that's Krishna's own abode. Then there's Vaikuntha, and then there's Mahesh Dham, and then there's Devi Dham. And it's Devi Dham which is the abode of Durga Devi. And so in the next verse it explains that Srishti Stiti Pralaya Sarana Shakti Eka. So Srishti Stiti Pranaya. Pralaya means devastation. Srishti means creation. Then Srishti Stiti. Stiti means maintenance. And Pranaya means destruction. So Durga Devi, it says Srishti Stiti Pralaya Sarana Shakti Eva Chayeva Yasha Bhuvanani Vibharti Durga. Vibharti Durga says that she is actually in charge of the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the material world. Does anybody want to argue with that? Might have heard other things as well. But anyway, we hear that, you know, Vishnu's the maintainer, Brahma's the creator, and who else? Shiva is the destroyer. But, you know, she's the material energy. Those elements are combining to do all these different things. In this way, we can say Durga is also doing those things. Durga, she's a shadow of the chit potency. What's the chit potency? The chit potency is the knowledge potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And she's a shadow of that. So, has anybody, there was a book called The Shadow, or is it The Substance and the Shadow? What's the real thing, the substance or the shadow? The substance. What's the substance, the real thing? The shadow follows the substance, isn't it? You know, what can you do with the shadow? So in other words, you're like a world of shadows. she's a shadow potency. She's a shadow potency is that the shadow, does the shadow suddenly start doing things on its own? It never does. You know, the shadow has to follow the substance, and the substance is Krishna. So this material world is just a shadow reflection of the spiritual world. This is the point that's being made. And Durga Devi is the one who was manipulating everything. It says that she controls the 10 directions. She rides on a lion. Sounds a bit ominous, riding on a lion. And she has 20 weapons. I mean, who has 20 weapons? That's how many weapons she needs to keep us occupied. You know, every weapon means that whatever you try to do in this world, I've got a weapon for it. It means there'll be a reaction. So, she's warning us, don't try it. When you see a picture of Durga Devi, your heart doesn't melt, does it? You know what I mean? And so this is the difference. And so, you know, Gopal Chapala, he was a devotee. Well, I don't know actually whether he was. He was the maternal uncle of Lord Chaitanya, actually. In everybody in Krishna's pastimes, they're taking parts and they're acting in certain ways just to fulfill the pastime. And so this was Gopal Chapala's particular situation. But, you know, in this pastime, we can understand that he was so envious. You know, envy is something that, you know, he said we can charm. And what's another thing that's envious? A snake. A human being can be envious also. But it says of the two, the human being's envy is worse. Because, you know, by snake, by proper mantras, we can charm the snake. But when a human being becomes envious, then it's very difficult. It's very difficult to actually control. It's impossible, actually. And here, you know, what's the point? Putting things outside his door just to make a, you know, this is the nature of the material world. Let me bring this person down. Let me bring this person down. What does that make me? That lifts me up, right? No, it just brings him down to our level. Or we try to bring him down to our level. So that's the material world. Everybody's on the lowest level. They're trying to bring everybody who tries to get off that level to try to bring them down. So Gopal Chapala tried to bring down Srivas Thakur by these, you know. And obviously, Srivas Thakur, what's the nature of a devotee if somebody tries to bring him down? You know, what? Don't talk to me like that. No, Srivas Thakur, he was immediately, you know, apologetic. This is a safe road. You know, to actually admit that there's some fault on yours. Even if there's no fault, we admit maybe I was at fault. You know, maybe I was at fault. And not even maybe in his case, yes, I was at fault, just see what. And he showed that, he even called everybody, this is, look at this, you know. And everybody knew, what's he talking about, you know, somebody's put it there. So, you know, by character, a person can be known. They knew his character. You know, Srivas Thakur was on the highest platform, and everybody knew that. He didn't have to defend himself. We never have to defend ourselves in this material world. You know, if we start defending ourselves, it means that we're actually in Maya. Because he just saw that whatever happens, it's Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And so he accepted it. And he went with it. And so a devotee has to learn that art. Whatever happens, you know, somehow or other, it's Lord Chaitanya's mercy. There's no doubt about that. And if I just follow this line, I don't struggle, I don't argue, then, you know, somehow or other, you know, it'll bear good fruit. It'll bear good fruit one way or the other in due course of time. We can either, you know, go back to Godhead struggling, or we can go back voluntarily. Who wants to go back to Godhead struggling? Put your hands up. Kicking up a fuss. Dragging your feet. So Gopal Chapala, you know, when Lord Chaitanya found out, immediately he started developing leprosy. You know, there were sores all over his body, they were bleeding. It was, you know, can you imagine if all your body's like cut? You know, the sores there and they're bleeding, it's like, inconceivable pain. And so he went to the bank of the Ganges, and there he sat under a tree because nobody would let him near them. He had to get out. This is the nature of leprosy. We have to go out of the village. And he was suffering there. And one day, a little later, Lord Chaitanya came by. And he said, you know, you're my maternal nephew. Look at the state of me, you know. You are very merciful to the fallen souls. Please help me. And what did Lord Chaitanya say? He said, you can suffer like that for 10,000 years. 10,000 births, I think it was. He says, you've actually insulted my devotee, Srivasta Thakur. This is what you deserve. And so, you know, why? Why did he say that? Because he was asking for forgiveness, but he hadn't reformed the heart. He was asking for his own benefit. He wanted to get out of this difficulty. And Lord Chaitanya was making the point, you've put yourself into this difficulty. It's another reason a devotee doesn't complain. And it may seem that Lord Chaitanya was angry with him, but in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, I'm not envious of anybody, I'm not equal to anybody. We said this the other day, that, you know, he's actually on the transcendental platform. So we should always remember that Krishna never hates anybody, no matter what they've done. He sees the fault and he rectifies the fault. So he was rectifying Gopal Chapala. And, you know, as far as Srivasta Kaur was concerned, there was no problem. No problem at all. What's his, you know, just put some paraphernalia outside my door. What's the problem? But Lord Chaitanya didn't see like that. Then, of course, he was suffering, Gopal Chapala. And then, you know, when we suffer, we actually, it makes us think, you know, why am I suffering? And then what happens when we stop suffering? It's like, you know, a lot of, you know, we might get some disease or some flu or something, you know, it's like we're suffering like anything. Then, you know, it may go on for like a week or two, and we're thinking, oh, when will this come to an end? And it seems like it's going to be eternity. Is that right? And then what happens on the day that it goes, within 5 minutes, it's forgot. Everything's forgotten. We just get on with life, don't we? It never even happened. So we wonder why, you know, why Krishna, you know, puts allows the living entity to go through long terms of suffering, because, you know, it's got to be something which makes a mark. I don't want to do that again. And we forget straight away. And so Gopal Chapala was suffering, and Lord Chaitanya came by again. And this time he'd gone through the process. What's the process? The 4 R's. The 4 recognition. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I'm at fault. Maybe I've done something wrong. Maybe I deserve this. Recognition, that's the first one. A devotee has to recognize that, you know, it could be my fault. And then what's the next thing? Oh. What's the next one that starts with R? Oh. Eh? Regret, remorse. Regret's one thing, and remorse is similar, isn't it? Remorse means same thing, isn't it, more or less? Remorse, is it? We've got English scholars here. What's the difference between regret and remorse? Yeah, we regret. Then remorse means we start to do something about it. Regret, remorse. I'll add another one, make the 5 R's. And then what comes next? What do we do? What do we have to do then? Eh? Repent. That's another one. And the last one. This is a difficult one. This is, we get them all right up to this one. Reconcile. Oh, that's another one. Reconcile that. Reconcile. And then we'll have to reconcile. Rectify. Rectify. When Prabhupada, he used to jump straight to the one with rectify. If somebody came up and said, Prabhupada, this is happening, this is happening, this is happening. He
says, so what are you going to do? He said, rectify.
So then he started to rectify. He was really humble. He prayed to Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya saw that he had changed his heart, and therefore he said, okay, now you're ready. He said, you go to Srivastakur and you pay your obeisances and say you're sorry. And so he did, and his leprosy went away. And so, you know, in devotional service, we have to be sorry for what things that we've done. We have to tolerate and we have to forgive, don't we? Tolerate ourselves. Is that an easy one, to tolerate ourselves? What do you mean by tolerate ourselves? Tolerate our shortcomings. You know, because, you know, in the material world, everybody wants to be the tendency is, you know, everybody wants to be the best. And anything short of that is not good enough. And sometimes in devotional service we can have that same outlook. We want to be the best. And then, you know, when we realise we're not, it's actually, we're not so happy about that. But we have to, you know, and that's where we need to tolerate that. We start to tolerate that, wait a minute, and maybe I'm not on that platform. And this is a really healthy sign. And just like Srivastakura, he was immediately on the bottom platform. He was just like servant of everybody. And so this is our philosophy. We're always a servant. What was I going to say now?
Yeah, there's
the first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita is to tolerate, isn't it? You know, matras sparsha stakantiya shitoshna shukadukada agama payeno nityas tamsatikshasvabarat. Before that, Krishna's giving information, you're not the body, you know. But this is the first thing he tells Arjuna to do. You have to tolerate. You're in the material world. You know, when you've got some disease, what can you do about it? You have to tolerate. You have to be patient. That's why they call you a patient. We're all patients. We're all patients in the material world. We're all in the waiting room. And so therefore, the first instruction is that, okay, it's going to take some time. You know, you have to be patient. Things are not going to happen. You know, we want things to happen. You know, that's another thing about the material world, isn't it? We want things to happen immediately. As soon as we start practicing devotional service, you know, we're looking for the hairs standing on the end. At least I were, anyway. After about three days. I read the Nectar of Instruction, Nectar of Devotion, about ecstatic symptoms. Wow. So, yeah, we want things. And Prabhupada said, the trouble with you devotees, you Western devotees especially, you want things to happen straight away. You know, one of the great, patience is a virtue. And in due course of time, that patience is rewarded. This is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Tolerate and carry on. So, I don't know where to go. There's a few things here. Yeah, when Indra, you see, Lord Chaitanya treated Gopal Chapla in a particular way. He wasn't pleased at all. And but then there's the story of Indra. To get to the post of Indra, you have to perform 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices, horse sacrifices. So, you know, so Indra's in that position because he's done that. And the thing is that he's a very exalted demigod. He's the king of all the demigods, and you know, he's been given responsibility of the you know, the administration of the universe. You know, when we get a temple president's job, we think, you know, this is, you know. But he was actually the temple president of the universe, more or less. I mean, Lord Brahma is higher than that. But yeah, you know, it's not an easy situation. As soon as we get Indra's post, then Krishna uses that particular living entity who's got Indra's post, and he really goes through it, in one respect, in that he uses him to set an example for the rest of the universe. And in this particular thing, you know, Indra saw that the nature of that, when we've got some material post, is what do we want to do? We want to keep it, don't we? You know, we protect it. When we get something, we protect it. And the same when we get a position, we protect it. And so Indra, you know, he was still flickering on the bodily platform. Bayam dviti abhinivasetaha shat. When we dviti means duality. He was still in duality about his existence. And as soon as we're on the bodily platform, then immediately we'll start to contemplate things in a material way. So he was doing that, and he was seeing that. He noticed in the material world there was one king called King Prithu, and he was performing his 99th, was it 99th or was it his 100th? No, he'd done 99, he was in 100th, Ashvamedha sacrifice. You know, and Indra had tolerated it up to this point, but he couldn't tolerate it anymore. He said, if he does 100, he'll get my post. And so he came down, and while nobody was looking, all of a sudden the horse disappeared, the 100th horse. And then Vijitatsva, the son of Prithu Maharaj, he'd got some vision, mystic vision, and he saw Indra running off with the horse. And so he was a great warrior, and so Prithu Maharaj says, go and get him back, get the horse back. And so he was going to kill Indra. So Indra thought, but he let go of the horse. You know, he saved his own life, and he went. And so he got the horse back. And, but, you know, when once we start going down a certain tack, it's difficult to give up, you know, the momentum. And so Indra then, he was thinking, he thought, they won't stop a sannyasi. They won't dare approach. So he got dressed up as a sannyasi, and he stole the horse again. And Prithu said, he's there again, go on. And Vijitatsa set after him, and then he was drawing his bow, and he saw he was in sannyas outfit, and he thought, I can't do this. And Prithu was telling him, no, it's Indra. And so then, you know, once again they found out who it was, and he had to leave the horse, and they got the horse back again. And, you know, Brahma came at that point, and he started preaching to Prithu Maharaj. He says, what are you doing? He said, when somebody gets into that materialist concepts of life, don't take retribution on that person. He said, because you'll become as bad. You're becoming as bad as Indra. You're going to get your own back on Indra. He's not going to steal that horse if it's the last thing, you know, you do. So, and, you just and so he said, forgive him. Actually, he didn't say that at that time. He said, just leave it. He said, the more you get entangled in trying to, in tit for tat, the more you'll get into the material concept of life, and you'll regress towards the darkest regions of the universe eventually. And so Prithu Maharaj took Brahma's G's word. And then a little later, Indra appeared with Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu said, this is Indra. He's just come and told me what's happened. He said, he's very sorry about the situation. You know, please forgive him. So, you know, obviously, Prithu was a devotee. Immediately, he forgave Indra. So it seems like, you know, maybe Vishnu is partial. Look how he treated, you know, they were both offences, weren't they? Yeah? So what was the difference? Why did Gopal Chapala get such rough treatment? And why did, you know, Indra... I mean, Indra did apologise. But maybe there's something else. Apology is a big thing. I was thinking that
You know, Gopal Chapala, he actually tried to defame a devotee. He really tried to, he got malice in his heart. You know, an offence is not really an offence unless you really want to hurt somebody. It's considered, you know, like, and, you know, Indra didn't want to hurt Prithu Maharaj. He just wanted to stop him from, you know, being successful with his particular sacrifice. So see the difference? Yeah? Is there a difference between these two offences? So the real offence is when we've got malice. If there's malice and we do something towards a devotee personally, then that's taken very seriously. And when there's just, you know, it's like jockeying for positions, we're not really hurting the devotee directly, then it's different. So this brings on another point, is that, you know, a devotee, one of the most important things we can do is to tolerate. And what comes after tolerate, the next, you know, it's like a, it's like a, the same word. What they call that? What they, when something's equal word means the same? Equivalent. Now, there's another, what's that? Hey? Synonym. Equivalence, yeah. Synonym is, you know, like forgiveness. So this is one of the qualities of a devotee, is that, you know, we don't, I mean, Mahatma Gandhi said that, you know, like, we know that Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Lord, doesn't take offence. He just treats the devotees in a certain way, like eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But it's not revenge. It's to cheat the living entity. And Mahatma Gandhi once said, he said that if a living entity takes this pose, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead does, of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, he said the whole world would be blind and toothless. So, yes, so we, I've got some quotes on forgiveness in this, on this computer. Okay, first of all, beliefs about forgiveness. Devotees should always get these questions right, but sometimes in the heat of the moment we find that we may be struggling. Is there anything that a devotee can't forgive? I think that, you know, I don't have to go through this list, I can just ask that question. Is there anything which a devotee can't forgive? Offences to another devotee. Anything else? Offences to a spiritual master. Is there anything that can happen to us that we can't forgive? Everybody's thinking, there's a lot, maybe, but I'm not going to say anything, because I'm not supposed to be like that. Yeah? If what? If you could what? Yeah, but actually there's nothing to forgive, is there? You know, we're in the material world and everything that happens is what we're due to, so, you know, what is it to forgive, you know? We, like we said earlier, we just accept it. Anybody who comes along and gives us a hard time, he's just delivering our karma, he's the postman. He's just delivering what we're due to, it's not the person. Some forgiveness wisdom here. This is not really Vaishnava philosophy. If we understand that point, that, you know, the law of karma You know, and even devotee, when he takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna personally takes care of that devotee's karma. And he just administers what he needs to actually purify him. So devotees seem like that also. But, you know, it doesn't always work. Like we were saying, you know, we're caught up in the situation and we lose our intelligence. So there's maybe some one or two things I can just say which may stick in the mind and remind us. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, forget the past that sleeps, nor the future dream at all, but act in times it all with thee, and progress ye shall call. So, you know, it says forgiveness. If we forgive somebody, it releases us from the past. Otherwise, we're tied up in the past. And when also another point, when we actually let go of, when we forgive somebody, it means we get energy, don't we? We're tied into that situation. And all those thoughts are going into that, and so many unnatural qualities start to develop, like hate, fear, and like, and they stop us from expanding our service. yeah, it releases us from being tied into that situation. It gives us energy. Forgiveness is giving up the resentment to which you are entitled. So this is a material concept. And offering to the person who hurt you friendlier attitudes to which they are not entitled. So it gives up. You see, the thing is, when we forgive somebody, it's not necessarily that person's let off the hook. It's like, you know, somebody may have done something really atrocious, and we may think to forgive that person means that person is no longer culpable for what they've done. Now, forgiveness means we actually free ourselves. If somebody's done something wrong, they may still be actually punished for that, but we don't hold the resentment in our hearts. We let it go. And a devotee can easily do that if he remembers the philosophy that everything's coming to me due to my karma. Oh, that's the point, resentment. So, yeah, we can always get caught up in the particular situation we're in. And even though we know the philosophy, and there's one nice pastime in the Ramayana which I can actually explain. When we'll start with, there was Sugriva. He was a king of the monkeys, and his older brother was called Vali, and Vali was, you know, really giving Sugriva a hard time, and Sugriva wasn't at fault, and you know, Vali tried to kill Sugriva. And so what happened is that, you know, an alliance with Lord Ramachandra was made between Sugriva and Lord Ram, and they both said they would help one another. So Lord Ramachandra killed Vali, and Sugriva promised to help Lord Ram to find Sita. At that time, Sita had been stolen by Ravan. And so he sent different parties in different directions looking for Sita. He sent three of the devotees to the north, three to the east, three to the south, three to the west, to the south, and three to the west. And the three sent to the south, does anybody know who they were? Hanuman, Angad, and what was the last one? Angada. Anyway, I can't remember the third one. Eh? Jambavan. I don't know. I don't think so. Anyway, we've got two of them. So, the third one. And so what happened is that Angad was the son
of valley, and you know, if your father's being killed, you know, it doesn't leave a very good feeling in the heart. And even though he was completely not at fault, Sue Griever, you know, and at least externally, and God had accepted it, that, okay, I just get on with my service. But he had some resentment in his heart that his father had been killed. And that resentment was okay up to the point when they were told that after, you know, so many weeks, you should come back and report. And those weeks were up, and they hadn't found Sita, so they were like really disturbed, because, you know, they realised that when they go back, they'd be not treated so nicely, because that's what Sue Griever said. He said, you come back, but anybody who comes back late, he says, then there'll be some punishment for them. So they were wondering whether to carry on and look for Sita and risk punishment when they went back, or go back straight away. And Angard, at this point, this failure, extra failure in his life, he'd lost his father, he was, you know, he was under the monarchy of Sue Griever, his brother, and his brother was implemented in killing of Valley. And so he got this resentment and this extra burden that he couldn't find Sita, because he was a valiant person, he was a valiant fighter. It started to actually bring out this resentment. You know, when we're having so many failures, it brings out the negative qualities. And he started to preach to the... they got a little group of soldiers with them, that we, you know, we might as well, you know, if we go back to Lanka, if we go back to Sue Griever, you know, he's going to kill us if we whether we go back now or whether we wait and we go back late, you know, it just started thinking that way. It wasn't actually true. So when we develop these negative qualities, we start to think in so many untoward ways. And half of these soldiers were thinking that way, half were thinking in terms of, no, that's not correct, we'll go back anyway and we'll be okay. And at that point, they started to remember Jayatu. And Jayatu, you know, he fought valiantly to try and save Sita, but he lost his life. And so Angad was thinking remorsefully that, you know, it's okay for Jayatu, you know, at least, eh? Jatayu. It's okay for Jatayu. You know, he actually went in, he was famous. He left his body fighting to save Sita, but, you know, we're going to die in an infamous way. And at that point, he decided that he would... one part of the army decided they would fast till death. This was the most glorious thing to do. So, you know, his remorse had got him to such a state that one thing had happened after another. They was just going to pack in the whole thing, and he was going to, you know, take his life. And he'd got other soldiers to think that way. And at that time, when he was talking about Jayatu, Sampati, this wingless bird, came into the association of the soldiers there, and he was thinking, oh, here's my meal. This is my meal. I can't fly, it's very difficult for me to subsist. And he was speaking like this, and then at that point, when Angad started to talk about Jayatu, and Sampati suddenly stopped and froze, because he'd heard that Jatayu had been killed, and he didn't know. And he started to lament like everything, and he was looking at Sampati, this wingless bird, and he could see everybody was interested in what he was... And so he started to relate the story, how, he'd saved Jatayu once when he was the elder brother, and they were flying towards the sun. And the sun became very hot, so he protected Jatayu with his wings, and the sun burnt his wings off. And so Jatayu was actually saved, and he fell to the earth. And from that moment, he'd never seen Jatayu. Then when he heard that Jatayu had been killed, he was lamenting like that. And so then, you know, Angad, he got an idea. He thought, this bird, you know, he may be able to help us to find out where Sita is. And so he started to ask Sampati, and Sampati said, "Yes, I did. When Ravan kidnapped Sita and was flying over, Sita threw a ring down. And I've got that ring now." He says, "So I saw that they actually were going to Lanka." And so everybody was elated, you know, they didn't have to commit suicide. Everything was okay now, everything had changed around, everybody was cheering. And so what's the point here that we're making? I'm sorry, it was a little bit intermittent story. It wasn't so clear, but we're talking about, you know, tolerating ourselves, giving ourselves room to go forward, forgiving ourselves for things that we're not forgiving completely, but, you know, giving ourselves enough room to rectify things. And Angad, you know, under a lot of pressure, his father had been killed. You know, that resentment in his heart, it started to fester. And it came out in an untowards way that he was just going to take his life and the life of some other soldiers, even though there was no need to be. You know, he'd seen that, actually, if I go back to Sugriva, he's going to kill me. That wasn't true. He'd started to think like that. This is the way the mind starts to work when we have resentment in the heart. It comes up with so many different things. You know, and everybody in the material world, you know, we're actually inflicted by this resentment to some degree. And so we shouldn't think that when Lord Chaitanya, against Gopal Chapala, he had any resentment. He was acting completely transcendental. So we shouldn't, anything that happens to us in devotional service, we should also try and be transcendental. We don't, you know, we just see it for what it is. It's just the influence of time. You know, the influence of time will be over after some time as also on this particular situation, and we'll move on. So a devotee is always positive in his devotional service. He's always able to see the light at the end of the tunnel, even in the most difficult situation. So Krishna actually says day before yesterday, Krishna said in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says that my devotee should always remain happy in every situation performing devotional service, even though, you know, we're inflicted by the reverses which come upon us due to our nature to try and enjoy this world. You know, that's our nature. In Bhagavad Gita it says, by nature, because of the material energy and the conditioning, we're non-devotees. And so a devotee is what? Yeah, our real nature is covered by the material energy, and therefore we carry these things, and so we're fighting against the Lord. So, you know, Krishna's telling us in the 11th canto, even though there's so many reasons to give in, I've had enough, we remain happy that we're on the right path, even though there's so many reverses. You know, and we also realize that every time we're trying to enjoy this world, what will happen? If every time we try to enjoy this world, what will happen? We'll suffer. To the degree we try to enjoy this world, to that degree we'll suffer. We don't remember that, though, when we're trying to enjoy, that's a problem. But if we could, I'm going to suffer. So Krishna's also saying a devotee should be aware of this. So we can stop there anyway. Santarar Srimant Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.